Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome to episode 151 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am so happy that you're joining me today. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. You are going to love what you hear. Twice a week, we interview the best Magic players in the world, as well as community notables to help you take your game to the next level. The goal here at MTG Pro Tutor is to help 1,000 players qualify for the Pro Tour. So that is by top 8ing a Grand Prix or making top 4 of an RPTQ. We are here to help you on your journey. And if you have been listening to the show for a while, thank you. I love having you here. I love doing this with you and for you. And it's been a blast going on this journey with you. Thank you for sharing the show and supporting it in all ways possible. On the note of supporting, before we dive into the interview, I want to say thank you to the patrons. At mtgprotutor.com/Patreon, you can go and learn more about what we have going on over there. Basically, you can pledge any amount you want per episode, set a monthly limit so you never go out of budget. And as a thank you, each and every month, I do a drawing for the patrons only, where I give away some form of Magic product. In addition to that, I started doing a little series called What Magic Has Taught Me About Life. And I pick different topics, and every now and again, I'll post a little video about what Magic has taught me about. Relationships was the first one that I did, about being married. I'm going to do one about being a brother, about being a dad, things like that. So, and that's on the patron-only side of the Patreon feed. So mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can go check that out. The support is invaluable. It helps me do things like get editing done, get the show notes done, and allows me to focus on the things that I am good at. Speaking of show notes, I want to say thank you to Sheena. She was my show notes girl, and she did a great job of putting the show notes together and getting the episode posted properly, but she had to stop doing that particular task. Her computer got damaged, and she and her family are moving to a rural area with no internet, so she will not be able to be doing the show notes anymore. So, Sheena, thank you so much for all you did. You were a valuable part of the MTG Pro Tutor team, and you will be missed greatly. And so now, moving forward, I'll be doing the show notes again until I find somebody else who can help me with that process, because I really feel strongly about giving somebody else the opportunity to contribute in that capacity. So last weekend was the World Magic Cup. I, unfortunately, was not able to see much of it at all because I was traveling, I was moving, and boy, am I glad that's all over. It's so nice to be here in Tennessee with my wife's family. We'll be here for the next couple weeks. It's going to be great to not have to travel because last week was crazy. So I hope that you got to see a little bit of the World Magic Cup, and I want to say congratulations to Greece. So cool. The Greek team took down the event. They got first place, and wow, just that's so cool to see, you know, teams like that emerge and just do so well. So I'm really happy for them. I looked at the top 8 teams. So fun, like countries all over the world, obviously, and I'm really looking forward to inviting them onto the show. Some of the most fun guests we had this past year were World Magic Cup competitors in the last World Magic Cup. So I'm really excited to invite them and bring them on the show for sure. That's really it for the top of the interview stuff, other than this weekend is Grand Prix Chiba. So that'll be fun to see what's going on over there and then invite the top 8 onto the show for sure. If you are in the United States celebrating Thanksgiving this week, hope you have a fantastic time with friends and family and take the opportunity to pause and give thanks. One thing I sure as heck am thankful for is you, the Prodigies. Thank you so much for making this an amazing community to be a part of. I absolutely love doing the show. I love being part of the community and interacting with you, playing Magic, asking questions, learning and growing. I am so blessed to be doing this and have you to thank for it. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, that's it. Without further ado, let's bring in our guest, sit down and talk about Magic. What is up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a college student from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and an up-and-coming Magic player with a penchant for playing control decks, experience on the Pro Tour, and most recently, a Grand Prix Top 8 competitor. Prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Alex Midas. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Sean. How are you?
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Sure I am. Do my best.
Excellent, excellent. Now, all you prodigies out there, Alex is not on Twitter. So if you want to reach out to him and say thanks for being on the show or ask him a follow-up question, the best place to do that is on Facebook because he's not on Twitter. So just let him know how much you appreciated his show here. So
Alex, we love to learn about you outside of Magic before we dive into the Magic stuff. So are you born and raised there in Albuquerque? Is that where you and your family are from?
Yep, that'd be it.
Excellent. And you're going to school there currently? You mentioned that you are a college student.
Yeah, I go to the University of New Mexico, and I'm working on a mathematics degree, actually.
Excellent. Okay, so I was going to ask what you're working on. How deep into that are you? Almost done? Just started?
I'm about halfway through, I would say. I'm on my third year, just starting.
Okay, excellent, excellent. So, mathematics degree, you're doing that because you want to master combat math and just put go all in on Magic, I'm assuming. That's why you chose math.
Of course, yeah.
All right,
statistical probabilities, all that jazz.
So, do you have, I don't know, what, research or teaching or go on for higher education? Like, what are your thoughts with the mathematics degree moving forward? Is it just something that you love and you just wanted to study it more?
It's something that I like. I do sort of have this notion that I'm going to get a bachelor's degree and work on teaching maybe high school, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely, I mean, definitely needed, you know, needed field for sure, helping people out, especially with math. You know, that's just one of those things. If you can get it when you're younger, it kind of sticks with you, I think, a little bit better.
I agree, yeah.
Excellent. Love it. So we love that you are out there in front of us, holding the torch, leading the way, doing what we want to do, you know, making it to the top eight of a Grand Prix, getting onto the Pro Tour. Love that. But we want to go back to your origin story. We would love to hear about the first time that you ever saw or played with Magic cards. Take us there. Tell us that story. We want to be right there with you.
Oh, man. So I used to play Magic casually a lot before I started playing competitively. I can remember my first favorite card was Progenitus. That was the first card I saw. My friend, he owned one, and, you know, Progenitus was really cool. He had a deck that could actually get it into play, you know, spend all the five different colors of mana and play it, and it was pretty awesome. So I built my first deck, you know, a long time ago. It was probably like an elf deck, and that was, I think a lot of sets had been out. I think Lorwyn had just come out. So that's why with the elves. And so yeah, I just played casually for a long time before I finally dipped my feet into competitive Magic.
Love it. Do you remember the first time that somebody said, "Hey, look at this." And you're like, "What's this?" You know, that very first exposure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would say Progenitus, really.
Okay, so just a friend was like, "Look at this crazy guy."
Yeah, that's my biggest memory.
That's cool.
It's how am I ever going to beat that card, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So you must be really excited that the Grand Prix promo next season is Progenitus.
Oh, yeah, I like that. I like that they kept the old artwork, too.
Yeah, I know. Super cool. I mean, I remember the same day, very same day, somebody posted in the group, what is it, the RPTQ? Yeah, yeah. The promo for that is Emrakul, right? The Aeon's Tour with the new art. It looks super cool. We're like, wow, that's so awesome. And then, like, a couple hours later, they posted, and here's a Grand Prix one. And we're like, really? Old art? I mean, come on. Anyways, anyway, whatever. I got my Stoneforge Mystics, so I'm good to go.
Nice.
So, sweet. So, you came in. What was that first set? You said Lorwyn? Was that your very first set?
Yeah, I would say casually, yeah.
Awesome. Lorwyn was the first set you came in on. So, since then, what has been your favorite set?
It may be the same set. Certainly, flavor-wise, I would say the same set. In terms of gameplay and cards, maybe I would say something like Innistrad, which is the set that I came in when I started playing competitively.
And so along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
Oh, man. I'm definitely going to have to say Sphinx's Revelation for this one.
Sweet. All right. So for those of us who don't know, what is that card? What does it do? And why do you like it?
Okay. So it costs blue, blue, white, X. And however much you pay X, you get to draw that many cards and gain that much life. So, you know, it's this big splashy effect. It pulls you back from the game if you're losing, and it just crushes people when you draw it on turn 13 or whatever and cast it for six. So I've got great memories with that card, and it's a powerful one.
Excellent, excellent. Sphinx's Revelation. Very good. To my knowledge, that is the first time that card has been mentioned as a favorite card here on the show. So that's really cool. Good stuff. So we got your first set, your favorite card. And what I would love to know is here you are. You came in on Lorwyn casually with Progenitus running around, stomping things in the face. And then you came in competitively on Innistrad. And here you are still playing Magic. Why? What makes Magic fun for you? What's been that hook that's kept you around?
Well, it's a multitude of things, really. I mean, the flavor and the story is really fun, and the art on the cards is great. But also just the competitive aspect of, oh, I get to think things through, and I get to try to do something better than someone else, and I get to prove that I'm the smart one, you know, which sounds kind of prideful, but I think everyone to some degree wants to do that. They want to show that either they're smart or that they can do something cool, and Magic sure does let you do that.
I completely agree, especially with, obviously, guests of the show. The competitive aspect of Magic comes up a ton, and that's no surprise since we're bringing on Grand Prix Top 8s and Pro Tour Top 16s. But I agree with you there that I feel that everybody wants to be good at something, you know, in their life. And so Magic is a perfect outlet for that. You know, you can practice and you can, and there's many aspects of Magic that you can be good at. And whether it's just straight up win percentage or building a sweet deck, you know, with cool interactions, like you said, there's many ways for people to be good at Magic. And many of us peg the same standard as in, oh, I want to be good in the sense of making it to day two, top eight, pro tour, so forth and so on. But I completely agree. It's something that you can put energy into and see results and say, I am good at this. So I love that. I absolutely love how you touched on that and also mentioned the flavor, the story, the art. I think that's absolutely amazing. So when you started getting competitive in Magic, what was an aspect that you struggled with, something that you eventually overcame, like an early challenge that you overcame?
I would say that I used to play too impulsively. And I think this could be something a lot of players run into, where once they start understanding the game and understanding that they're somewhat good and they can beat other people, you start just kind of doing things. You make plays that seem good to you, and you just make them immediately. You know, you don't think through all of your options. And when you're trying to play really competitively, you have to examine all your options and really, really make sure you don't miss anything so you can make the right play. So I would say I used to just go with my gut and always just play really fast and do the first thing that came to my mind, and that wasn't always the best.
You know what? We had a guest in the show that mentioned that he did the same thing, but for him, like he realized he was lucky enough that his first impulse was usually pretty good, and he got so far in his career, more or less, making those impulsive plays, and then later on looked back and realized that out of happenstance, out of luck, like that impulsive play that he saw was a good play, a right play, and it's gotten very far. But he had to break through at a certain point and realize, okay, I need to think about what's, you know, a second, third, fourth play, what the outcome of those may be, because he quickly found out that there were other outcomes that, while his plays were good and getting him, you know, results in Magic, there were better plays that he could make as well. And so similar to you, like you said, you know, you would play impulsively, do that first thing that comes to mind. When if you take a look and kind of think about a couple other plays, you might find that while the one that you're about to do has a good result, there might be one that has a more optimal result.
Right. That sounds exactly like how I feel about that.
So how did you come to recognize that about yourself? And then what are some of the steps that you took to get better, to correct it?
I would say I recognized that once I started playing with the friends I play test with now. They were certainly better than me, or at least, you know, on my level and also aspiring to get better. And they would tell me, you know, Alex, you make plays really quickly, and did you think about this? And I said, oh, well, you know, maybe that would have been good. So I really had to kind of focus on slowing down and forcing myself to think through options, even that I initially thought were inferior, just to try to get through that.
And where did you find this great group? Like, is it just the other people that were attending competitive events regularly at your local, in your local area? Or how were these connections made?
Yeah, I mean, I used to play FNMs a lot. And I think I first met them there. And then at some point, you know, it became, you know, okay, let's go to these PTQs and see how we do there. And, you know, if you did all right there, just camaraderie. became friendship, and yeah, I know those people to this day.
Yep, yep. You at those Friday Night Magics that you were going to regularly, you start noticing, you know, the people that are serious players, always ending up towards the top, and those are the kind of people that you can go to and start talking to and learning from and asking questions, hanging out afterwards, asking more questions, playing Magic, going to other events, like you were saying, and forming this nexus of players that want to improve, like you said, being on the same level or better, but with the common goal of wanting to improve their game.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think that's neat. I think that's something that prodigies everywhere can do. You know, go to your game store, and as you go regularly, you'll see. It'll be obvious, you know, who those players are that are good and they're always at the top. And those people who are in areas fortunate enough to have several game stores, try them all. You know, like go to. I know that for me, there were three. Now there's only two, but there were three in my area, and I would drive past two of them to get to the shop that I wanted to go to Tapped Out Gaming, because I just could feel that the level of player there was where I wanted to be. You know, the other stores were kind of more casual, and I liked the feeling of people were here, they were serious, they were playing, having fun, but they wanted to get better, you know, and so I like that. And so try out the stores in your area, go regularly, and find those people that, you know, that you can resonate with and level up with. So, love it. Speaking of level up, perfect transition there, look what I did. Was there a time that, like a period of time, that you felt you grew as a player, that you kind of saw the Matrix and leveled up as a player?
Okay. This question's a little harder. I would say that the times that let me improve greatest was actually when I found Twitch, and I found players streaming there. I think the first person I watched streaming was Michael Jacob, you know, something like 4 or 5 years ago when he started, and he played lots of Constructed. And I would always watch lots of his matches, and him, you know, being a Michael Jacob, being a top 8 competitor, a national champion, was obviously a lot better than me. And as I was able to see what he did and kind of translate that to my own game, there's also Andrew Cuneo streamed a lot at that time, or for that year, he streamed for a whole year. And I would even go back and watch the old VODs, you know, and figure out why they made the plays they did and all of that.
That's awesome. And that's a great resource out there that people can utilize, is watching other people play. And I love how you recognize, hey, that's a period of time that you really grew as a player, was when you're able to tap into other people's, watch them play. And like you said, break it down. Why did they make this play? Thinking about it and going through it, and I would have made this play. And I think that's a really, really, really good way to kind of exercise yourself. And because you can watch a video, you can pause it. Okay, in this situation, I'll make this play. And then you unpause it and they didn't make the same play. You're like, okay, pause it. Why? Like, what did they do? Like, why did they kind of think it through? And don't just watch it and let it wash over you, but kind of take an active role in your learning to really kind of break it down and exercise your brain so you can try and see things. And I think that's a great way to go about it.
Yeah, I agree.
So you just mentioned a couple of players. Who else have been your mentors, either in person or far? What pro players, past or present, do you look up to and you admire?
Andrew Cuneo, I would say, is the pro player I most admire. He's not the most accoladed pro player, but he's respected from what I can tell by his peers, and I think he's a really interesting person. To that regard, almost every professional player is something to admire, just with their accolades. The whole Pantheon, Own Turtwell, Reed Duke, those guys are all great. Anyone who shows a love for the game and is respectful and is good, I admire.
Awesome. I was going to ask, you know, what specifically about, for example, Andrew Cuneo, but you just mentioned some qualities that are, you know, admirable. People who love the game, who respect the game and their opponents, and just do their part in fostering a wholesome community. I think that those are all people that we can look up to and are worthy of our attention and praise, I feel. So these players, you, me, we all have a journey, you know, in Magic. We all have, you know, events that we go to and our own little story. We all have highs and we all have lows, but those highs and lows are unique to each player. And so I want to dive into two moments with you. The first one being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience.
My worst Magic moment. Boy, there was one GP, I think it was Grand Prix. Oh, man, I can't remember the Grand Prix. I have a bad memory. It was a couple of years ago. It was Grand Prix San Antonio, I think. Anyways, I started off the tournament. Well, first of all, I did tons of preparation for the tournament, and I didn't get to go to very many GPs at the time, and so I got to the tournament. I was with my friends. It was a long drive over, and I had a deck I was planning to play, and ended up going 0-2, and then into a 0-3 drop.
Oh. And
yes. And I think mistakes were made, but I didn't really want to admit to myself that I made mistakes. And, you know, I just, it was just bad luck. And my friends both day two'd, and, you know, I just felt really terrible the whole time. But that was my worst moment, I would say.
So what did you take away from that experience? You know, because that sucks. You know, you put in a lot of preparation, you drove far for it, and then like 0-3 and didn't make day two. I was like, holy cow, like right off the bat, like didn't even have a shot. And so you kind of walked us through how you're feeling that weekend, which totally people can relate to. I know I've been there. I've traveled far and then not done well for sure. What did you take away from that experience? How did you learn, grow, move past it? Like, what was your big like takeaway?
Well, a couple things I would say. One is that just no matter what you do, it's very possible to 0-2 a tournament or just lose, even if you play correctly. But also, looking back on it, I can tell you certain mistakes that I made now that I'm more open-minded. But I think back then I was really closed-minded about mistakes, and I just thought I was really good. And, you know, that something like that should happen, it would be really unlucky. But now if I look back on it, I think, okay, well, maybe I did get a little unlucky, but I probably could have played better too. So it's not all variances' fault.
Yeah, you know, and that's a tough pill to swallow sometimes, you know, because you put in this effort and did all this stuff, you know, you don't want it to be your fault, you know, you don't want it to be, you know, that you're the reason why things didn't go as planned, and you're the reason why this trip, not wasted, but, you know, all the preparation and stuff just feels like, oh, it was for naught. So it's very easy to kind of look outward and put the blame on variance or whatever happens to be. And so it's, like I said, a tough pill to swallow to look inward and say, okay, what could I have done better, and kind of recognize, okay, this and this were definitely something that was on me and I could have done better. So, yeah, that's tough. And that's I'm glad that you know, we're able to make those realizations and walk away with a highlight, at least, that now here you are sharing with us, and I encourage Prodigies to do likewise. On the flip side are our highs and our proud Magic moments. So dive into this with us and tell us your proudest Magic moment to date.
Well, this one's easy. It's the first time I qualified for the Pro Tour.
Excellent. Tell us that story.
So it was the final PTQ before they moved into the new system of preliminary Pro Tour qualifiers, where you just had to win one tournament and then you would get an invite to the Pro Tour. So it was the standard with with Whip of Erebos and Corsair Crucifix and what set was that? Born Theros?
Yeah, Theros block. Yeah.
Theros, there you go, that standard. So yeah, that was just a great tournament. It was 50 or so people, so not too large. But I'd been going to a lot of PTQs before, and I made a couple top eights, but I never broke through. And that time I broke through. I even beat some of my friends in the top eight, which wasn't necessarily a great experience, but it's certainly something to remember. It was a fun tournament, and I ended up taking down the whole thing. And even though I had defeated some friends along the way, they were super happy for me. And yeah, it was just a great feeling.
Awesome. Wow. So what did it feel like when you finally made it, you know, and you locked that win and you knew you were going to Pro Tour? What did that feel like?
Well, it felt like, you know, all the time that I put into this game, it was all worth it, you know, like hours of just playing Magic Online or something else when you could be studying for school, you know. But yeah, it was a great feeling.
That's really neat. And which Pro Tour did you go to off of that?
It was Pro Tour Dragons of Tarkir. I did okay. I made day two.
Oh, nice.
Off a strong limited record, but I didn't have a great constructed deck, so that was about it.
What's it like trying to prepare for your first Pro Tour? And then what's it like going to that first Pro Tour? Because, you know, we've heard from other guests who were in a similar situation. I'd love to hear your experience in going to your first Pro Tour, and how the heck do you even prepare for that?
Well, first of all, I was super excited just to be there, so I wasn't too worried if I lost all my matches, you know. Second of all, I was the only person in my state qualified for that particular Pro Tour, so I didn't have too many people that were particularly interested in testing with me. So it was a little bit shooting in the dark. I was certainly a much worse player back then, and testing with the few friends that were interested in testing with me was hard. But yeah, it was still a good experience, and you know, I did my best, and I did all right, and not good enough to qualify for another Pro Tour, but well, here I am qualified for another one today.
Excellent. So how many Pro Tours have you been on? Is this the second one that you're going to go to, or?
Yeah, this is my second one.
Are you able to link up with other players this time around? Like, I guess what's going to be different about preparing for this next Pro Tour as opposed to preparing for your first Pro Tour?
So this time I have a larger network of players that I can work with, certainly. I also think about the game a little bit differently, and I do believe I'm a bit better, and I'm a bit more open-minded. And yeah, I guess the biggest thing will be just I have a bigger group of players now that I can prepare with and really hit it home. My friend Jacob Nagro was qualified for the last Pro Tour, the most recent one, and he got something. He finished in the top 64. So we did pretty well in preparing him for that, and I'm looking forward to what me and my team can put together for this PT.
Excellent. And are these other Pro Tour qualified people, or are they just strong Magic players that you were mentioning earlier?
They're strong Magic players, some qualified, some not. It's mostly, you know, we qualify as we can, you know. We're not gold pros or anything like that, but I feel like we're slowly ascending the ranks.
Excellent. How many pro points do you have right now, Alex?
Well, since it's a new season, I only have 5 from the GP top 8.
And then 3 just for showing up at the Pro Tour.
Yeah,
so
3
8.
For showing up, but then hopefully I can do well there and claw my way to silver this year or something
just,
like
that. Just a measly 12 more and you're good to go.
Yeah.
what other events do you have lined up this year, this season rather?
Well, I have a pretty busy school schedule, so I take them as I can get them. I plan on going to GP Denver and seeing how that goes, basically. And then, of course, the Pro Tour in February. And I'm also looking forward to the Team GP. That's the Team Modern GP. That's next year, which I know that's not for a while, but it's an exciting GP to think about.
Nice. Awesome. Super cool. One thing I thought of just now I would like to dive into, what, as far as preparation goes, what are some of the differences that you see in your preparation now versus what you did several years ago when you were, you know, maybe trying to qualify for that first Pro Tour? Like, basically, do what you and your friends and your group do now, is it any different than what you did back then? There's this myth, I think, people have in their minds that just what people who are qualified for the Pro Tour, what they do is there's some secret, you know, there's something magic about how they prepare. And I'm just curious, like, in your experience, what was it like back then? What's it like now? What are some of the similarities? What are some of the differences? Let's dive into the preparation aspect.
Right. So I don't think there's any big secret. You basically just have to sit down and do the work. So when I was qualified for my first Pro Tour, I mostly worked by myself. So there is only a small range of decks I was able to find because I was limited to my own creativity and, you know, my own work schedule. So I can only do so many drafts on Magic Online for, let's say. But with a bigger group, basically everyone comes up with their own decks or decks that they think are good, and that you get a wider range of things to play against. And with more people doing drafts on Magic Online, you can kind of confer information a lot easier, things like that.
So some of the differences were, like you mentioned, having that bigger network because now you just have more data inputs. Like, I love what you just said with the limited, for example. You get more people drafting, and so you just have a lot more data to come over what's good, what archetype, how archetypes performed, all that good stuff. You get all these people trying different decks, and so you get a lot more data on, oh, hey, this particular archetype seems to be doing well. Let's, you know, try and tweak the build a little bit, see if it really is a thing. As opposed to if you're just on your own or with a small group, you have a lot fewer data inputs, and it's much harder to get that broad knowledge, because maybe in your very small subset of practices, you know, a certain archetype did pretty well. But in reality, it's actually a really bad archetype, and you didn't know that because you didn't have enough data inputs to really get those numbers hashed out.
Right, right. There's a reason, you know, these big pro teams are always doing well at tournaments. It's because they have teams of, you know, 14 great players, and they have access to lots of data and everything you just said that lets them be prepared for the tournament they're going to play in.
Interesting. That's really interesting. So I like that. What I took away from that, don't, especially if you're preparing for like an event, don't do it alone. Do what you can to build your network. And even if it starts out small, don't do it alone. You know, even if it's just you and one or two other people, start there and slowly grow that network of players who really want to do well. And it really can be, you know, it doesn't have to be just local people. Like, we have this modern technology that lets us connect with people. So make friends at events that you go to and stay connected with people who really want to get better at Magic, because you can grow your information base and get more, again, of that data input so you can make better decisions moving forward. So that really, that to me was kind of the big takeaway that I got from what you just said. Did I kind of hit it there? Or do you want to cover a different part of that?
I think you kind of hit it. That's just sort of the reality. It would be nice if we were all just Shota Yasuokas, you know, we could just prepare by ourselves.
Lone wolves, yeah.
Yeah, but the reality is most of us will do much better if we have a team to work with.
So to get where you are now, you've obviously played thousands of games of Magic against probably hundreds of different people, different types of players. You've seen a lot, tons of lines of play. What has been the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
Biggest mistake. I would say the biggest mistake that I see would be mulligan decisions. So I think newer players tend not to mulligan enough. And then kind of the stronger player that isn't quite great or, you know, doesn't have quite that much experience mulligans too much. Mulligans, I would say. It's a hard science to knock down. You basically just have to play lots of different games with lots of styles of decks and have talked to lots of people about them. But it's something that once you get it down, it improves your play by a pretty big margin, I would say.
Man, so I know it's difficult, but do you have any heuristics or any thoughts or just anything about mulliganing decisions to help our decision-making process?
Well, that's the thing. That's what makes it hard, is each hand is different. I could give some examples. Like in Limited, I will see a lot of decent players mulligan hands that only have two lands, let's say, because they think, well, I have four mana costing cards in my hand. I need to mulligan because I just can't realistically get enough lands. But I think most really good players will keep almost all hands in Limited that have two lands, because you just need a high number of cards to compete in highly competitive games, I would say.
Yeah, like you said, it's one of those aspects of Magic that is so tough to really talk about and dive into and improve, because it's not like a, you know, there's no equation to it. You can't just be like, this is this. I'm always mulligan this, never mulligan that. Every deck is different. Every matchup is different. You know, a good hand against one deck might be a bad hand against another. And so, like you said, it just comes, a lot of it comes with that practice, you know, and repetition. And I think discussion, you know, I think remembering maybe an opening hand or something like that, or in a casual, when you're in a more casual environment, can't do this in competitive, obviously, but talk about it. Be like, okay, would you keep this? Why? Have those discussions, have other people look at it, make that decision, and just really kind of break it open and see, and then track it, you know, okay, like this hand, I floundered in it, and so maybe I shouldn't keep one land hand or two land hand in this particular deck or whatever. So yeah, it does take some active figuring out to really kind of get good at it. I'm definitely not good at it. I do mulligan a lot more than I did previously. I used to just be so deathly afraid of mulliganing. The new rule helps. But even then, I I want my cards. But I have gotten much better at, oh, this is not good. You know, I need to be a little bit more, six cards will be better than this right here, you know. So anyways.
Right, right. And there's always articles online, like on Channel Fireball. I know Paulo Vitor, Dom De Rosa tends to do an article series where it's Keeper Mulligan and stuff like that. So things like that, you look at enough hands and you'll just kind of broaden the scope of your understanding in the subject.
Yeah, cool, super cool. So turning that inward on you a little bit, what are some of your shortcomings? What are you working on as a Magic player?
So I still have a little bit of the playing too impulsively sometimes. For the most part, I've gotten around that, but sometimes I do just kind of think certain decisions are just much better than the others and they don't actually end up being. I also kind of limit myself when it comes to deck selection because I really prefer kind of slow, grindy decks or late game control decks as compared to, you know, like combo or aggro decks, when sometimes those decks are actually good choices for tournaments. So I would say being pigeonholed into certain archetypes is my weakness.
And what are you doing to move past that particular roadblock?
Well, I try my best to just play other decks, really. Just getting experience with playing aggro decks or combo decks in different formats. I don't enjoy them as much, but sometimes, you know, it's still Magic and it's still fun. So you just have to sit down and play them. And then as I find myself liking them more as I learn them more too. So
focusing that lens a little bit more, what has been the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
I would say that I'm kind of patient, or that I like to play around everything, even when that's not the best thing to do. I do understand generally what's in my opponent's decks and what cards that matter at certain stages of the game, which is why I think I'm good at playing control decks. I like to make sure I play around everything and come out on top.
So if you could go back in time, let's say 5 years, and have a conversation with yourself, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself?
I guess just to be more open-minded, I would say. Because I think if I was more open-minded back then I would listen to other players who told me I played too impulsively, or I would play other decks besides just control decks or something like that. And I would handle losses better too. So I think being open-minded is a really important trait for a Magic player.
Yeah, I totally agree. What would you say, Alex, is your best or your favorite format?
Best or favorite format? I like limited, if that's how you mean, if you mean between limited or a certain constructive format.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. So let's say, in the current limited, what is an underplayed card? I'm not going to hold you to it 3 months from now. I'll be like, you said it was going to be good. It's not. What card is not getting a lot of respect right now in limited?
let me think of some quirky rare. Okay, I can't exit the Panharmonicon. That's a good one. I think that card is actually just an easy slammed on first pick out of most packs, and it's just a super high level power level card, and it often goes pretty too late. Yeah,
man, that card, I have delusions of making like a constructed deck around that card. Like, it'd be nice to see it in standard. I know it's not gonna happen, but you know, I love the thought process. I think, okay, so let's look at all the creatures that have like really good enter the battlefield effects, but then it has to be, you know, that I feel like the deck would have to be good on its own without Panharmonicon, and that's just like an extra bonus, you know. So it has to get all these creatures that have good abilities by themselves, but pretty much exclusively have enter the battlefield effects, and then because you're gonna be taking turn 4 or hopefully 3 off to cast this bad boy, and then you really want to get the value out of it afterwards. And so, but I just love that card. I would love to see it do something somewhere, you know. That'd be cool.
Oh yeah, it's a sweet one. I especially love the games of limited where you get to play that and then immediately untap and play the one blue and a red 2/3 Thopter making guy where you get 3 energy and yeah. I'm bad.
Whirler
Virtuoso.
There we go. Whirler Virtuoso. Yeah, yeah.
That's nice.
Because then you get what? You get like 6 energy, and then you can just make a bunch of Thopters. Love it. So cool. So when it comes to limited, what advice would you have for newer limited players? What's one thing that a beginner should focus on when it comes to... Well, first of all, I guess pick either sealed or draft. And then really give us something that just one thing brand new players should focus on.
I would say keep almost every hand that has between 2 and 5 land in it, even if it might seem a little dodgy, unless it's absolutely horrendous, you should keep all hands that have between 2 and 5 land. And I guess besides the point of always playing, you know, 17 land in your deck, or, you know, making sure you have enough creatures, that would be my best advice.
Kind of going back to what you were talking about earlier, people pitch stuff that they probably should keep, especially in limited, just because, you know, in this particular case, you need the lands. And so having those are good. And it goes into, yeah, knowing what your curve is. And if you have the lands there in hand, then chances are you're going to draw the gas you need.
Right, right. One thing about limited as compared to constructed is when people think of constructed decks, they think, okay, well, I'm an aggro deck or I'm a control deck. When you play limited, your deck is very, very rarely pigeonholed into that kind of archetype. You're usually just going to have to play the games based on the cards you drew. And maybe you drew, you know, a nice curve of creatures and your opponent has a slow draw, then you're the aggressor in that game, you know. Or maybe you drew lots of removal plus your bomb. That means you're probably want the game to go on longer. So maybe you're the control deck. So you shouldn't keep hands based on, oh, I'm an aggro deck. I need to mulligan this hand with just 2 removal spells. And
that is a very good point. Like, don't pigeonhole yourself into a particular archetype, because based on your draw and their draw, it could be different. Like, yeah, ooh, I like that. I really like that. Oh, that's really good. So, Alex, do you have any daily non-negotiables, just stuff that you have to do every day, either Magic-related or not, that you feel sets you up for the day or leads to your success?
I don't know that that's true of me at all. I'm pretty I don't really follow too much of a schedule. I do try to play some amount of Magic Online per week, I would say, just to stay up to date with all the formats that I plan on playing. But yeah, that's about all.
Now, do you have any Magic-related resources that you like to recommend? I know that you mentioned Twitch, watching people on there, articles on Channel Fireball. Do you have any other Magic-related resources?
Those are the big ones. Star City Games is good. I know there's like manadrain.com. Almost anywhere where you can read articles is great. Even if you're not reading top-tier content from someone who just won a Pro Tour, you know, anything that just gives you information, and as long as you're open-minded about it, it should help you improve altogether as a player, I would say.
Prodigies out there, once again, if you want to connect with Alex, the best place to do that is on Facebook, because he is not on Twitter, which is totally cool. No worries there. Alex, what is one last parting piece of guidance that you have for us? Either something that you've already said you want to emphasize, or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end?
Well, I would say that make sure if you're playing Magic that you're doing it because you think it's fun and not because you're trying to prove something to somebody, or you feel like you've committed so much time in your life that you have to do it. If at any point you don't feel like Magic is fun, you should, you know, rethink what you're doing, I would say, because Magic at its core, it's a game and it should be really fun.
Alex, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse and to thank you for your time and for sharing your experiences with us today. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
There you have it, episode 151 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast with Alex Midas. Thank you so much, Alex, for coming on the show. You really have the Midas touch, and I really appreciate you sharing your journey and your stories with us. I learned a lot. Prodigies, I hope you did as well. As always, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/AlexMidas. There will be a synopsis of everything that we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. As we wrap things up for today, I want to congratulate the Greek team again for winning the World Magic Cup last weekend, and say good luck to everybody going to Grand Prix Chiba this weekend. I look forward to reaching out to the World Magic Cup competitors, as well as the top 8 of Grand Prix Chiba this weekend. I want to let you know how grateful I am for you this week of Thanksgiving. I'm obviously reflecting on all the things I am thankful for, and this podcast and you, the Prodigy, the community that we have here, is definitely high among the list. I love doing this. I'm super excited to be part of the Magic community, and I love the subset that we have here in the Pro Tutor Prodigy realm. So get out there and play some Magic this week. Take time to be thankful for the things and people in your life that are important. And with that said, we will definitely see you next Friday. And until then, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.